For centuries, many have believed that spirits or other supernatural entities, whether good or evil, could possess the bodies of the living, taking total control of the host for minutes, hours, or days, sometimes indefinitely. In most cultures or religions, possession is accepted as the way that the spirit world or the gods or the demons would communicate with the living, bringing messages or warnings or demands to be heeded. But some religions, especially the Roman Catholic Church, see all possession as inherently evil, and so the official rite of exorcism was created by the Vatican in 1614. Join us as Redbeard examines the rite of exorcism.
In the late 1940s in the United States, priests of the Roman Catholic Church performed a series of exorcisms on an anonymous boy documented under the name Roland Doe or Robbie Mannheim. The 14-year-old boy was the alleged victim of demonic possession, and the events were recorded by the attending priest Raymond Bishop. Subsequent supernatural claims surrounding the events were used as elements in the 1971 novel The Exorcist by William Peter Blatty, and the 1973 film adaptation. Roland was born into a German Lutheran family. During the 1940s, the family lived in Cottage City, Maryland. Roland was an only child and depended upon adults in his household for playmates, primarily his Aunt Harriet. His aunt, who was a spiritualist, introduced Roland to the Ouija board when he expressed interest in it. After Aunt Harriet's death, the family experienced strange noises, furniture moving on its own accord, and ordinary objects such as vases flying or levitating when the boy was nearby. The family turned to their Lutheran pastor, Luther Miles Scholes, for help. Long interested in parapsychology, Scholes arranged for the boy to spend a night in his home in order to observe him. When parapsychologist J.B. Ryan learned that Scholes claimed he witnessed household objects and furniture seemingly moving by themselves, Ryan wondered if Scholes unconsciously exaggerated some of the facts. Scholes advised the boy's parents to see a Catholic priest. According to the traditional story, the boy then underwent a number of exorcisms. Edward Hughes, a Roman Catholic priest, conducted an exorcism on Roland at Georgetown University Hospital, a Jesuit institution. During the exorcism, the boy allegedly slipped one of his hands out of the restraints, broke a bedspring from under the mattress, and used it as an impromptu weapon, slashing the priest's arm and resulting in the exorcism ritual being halted. The family traveled to St. Louis, where Roland's cousin contacted one of his professors at St. Louis University, Raymond J. Bishop, who in turn spoke to William S. Bowden, an associate of College Church. Together, both priests visited Roland in his relative's home, where they allegedly observed a shaking bed, flying objects, the boy speaking in a guttural voice, and exhibiting an aversion to anything sacred. Bowden was granted permission from the Archbishop to perform another exorcism. The exorcism took place at the Alexian Brothers Hospital in South St. Louis, Missouri. Before the next exorcism ritual began, another priest, Walter Halloran, was called to the psychiatric wing of the hospital, where he was asked to assist Bowden. William Van Roe, a third Jesuit priest, was also there to assist. Halloran stated that during the scene, words such as evil and hell, along with other various marks, appeared on the teenager's body. Allegedly, during the Litany of the Saints portion of the exorcism ritual, the boy's mattress began to shake. Moreover, Roland broke Halloran's nose during the process. Halloran told a reporter that after the rite was over, the anonymous subject of the exorcism went on to lead a rather ordinary life. So when we talk about cases like this, such as the one including Roland Doe or Robbie Mannheim, this is a true story, of a documented exorcism case, which went on to actually be, you know, the inspiration for the movie The Exorcist, which we all know.
Right.
So obviously The Exorcist has a lot of, you know, really dark and very brutal and graphic scenes, you know, which everybody knows she does some really weird things to her crucifix. I mean, those are all taken to the ninth degree for the sake of making a horror movie. But when you look at the actual case of this 14-year-old boy, it's kind of terrifying. You know, it just makes me think, you know, like nothing was working. So they brought in this priest and they did an exorcism too. And those actually, you know, basically these exorcisms solved the problem. You know, they actually got rid of whatever was causing him to actually act out this way. So, you know, that brings me to the question, if this seemed to be the only thing that worked, what are your theories on that?
Theories? You want to talk about theories? I don't have any theories.
Okay.
But what I can tell you is I do have beliefs, much like you.
Okay.
See, you believe in this sort of thing, and I don't. So, for example, what might have been Tourette's was not officially discovered and documented until 1885. So when somebody's, you know, expressing the symptoms of Tourette's, they're speaking out and like cursing for no reason or seemingly out of nowhere and can't control it, or they have a tic or they're convulsing epilepsy, for instance. These are things that, you know, there were no cures for, and so they were explained away by being possessed by a demon. And the cure for that, or the fix, was to have somebody come in and perform an exorcism. However, you know, being raised a Catholic, you know, it's kind of hard to, you know, throw it all out the window and, you know, not have anything kind of like, you know, holding on and tugging at you and saying, hey, this stuff is real. So I'm not saying that I'm riding the fence, but there's the analytical side of me, the scientific side of me, the technical side of me is very, very strong. And that is the part that overpowers the belief in this sort of phenomenon. I would tend to call this more of a psychological thing. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, this kid's aunt was a spiritualist who, up until the point that she entered the picture, he didn't have any problems. Everything was normal. Like, so she enters the picture and introduces him to spirituality via a Ouija board, right? And all of a sudden, this kid's hearing like scratches on the walls and the floors, and, you know, maybe hearing some whispering or something like that. And I mean, this could simply be explained by, like, you know, maybe hearing somebody talking from the other side of the wall, or, you know, maybe the wind just playing tricks on him and his mind like interpreting these things because it's all fired up from being introduced to the spirit world, right?
But there's a lot of...
But your brain is very powerful,
No,
man.
I know that. But, I mean, you can't chalk it up to just that. I mean, so it comes down to what I believe, though.
I'm not chalking it up to just that.
No, I understand that.
You asked me my theory.
No, that's true, true.
It's not my theory, but it's the way that I explain it, and it's a way that I think it could have gone down. I'm not saying that's the only way.
Totally.
I'm saying that that's a way.
No, totally. And I hear you on that. I think the difference or the disagreement I think that I have with that is, I think there are a lot of things that, you know, it can't be explained because the way that you're rationalizing it is he was hearing whispers, or it could have been something from the other side of the wall. I mean, these are things that we're never going to know, but yeah, maybe he did hear some things. And maybe after you start talking about spirits, you know, you hear a weird noise in the house and all of a sudden that makes you think that it could be something other than it is. But when your body is actually doing things that is out of your control and you start getting violent for no reason, you start actually hurting other people, you start... your voice completely changes. The bed is shaking beneath you when you're just laying on it, visibly shaking. You're moving things with your mind. You know, those are all things that I don't care if you're a 14-year-old boy and you, you heard a ghost story. That stuff just doesn't happen to you because you use the Ouija board. I mean, actually, that's wrong. That stuff may happen to you if you use the Ouija board, because technically, a lot of people say that when you use a Ouija board, you actually open up a doorway that should never be opened. You're inviting spirits in to communicate with you. And if you don't close that door, you're opening yourself up to all that stuff. That's the theory behind a Ouija board. So, correction, if you play with a Ouija board, you probably are opening yourself up to that stuff. But if somebody tells you a ghost story, I mean, that's not going to necessarily open that stuff up. So, is it a coincidence that this stuff happened after he played with a Ouija board? Maybe. I mean, it could be. I mean, we'll never know if it was going to happen if he didn't play with a Ouija board. But I just feel like there are certain things in this case that were very unlike this child, a 14-year-old boy, and all of a sudden they come in and do the exorcism and it stops it.
Well, I mean, I also feel like, though, like in those situations, if your brain is playing those tricks on you, if you are being controlled by your subconscious and you trick your subconscious into believing that it's over,
mm-hmm.
and that, you know, the forces of good have won,
mm-hmm.
then you're good. You're
I don't know. I don't know how.
You know what I mean, it's a lot like placebo.
Yeah.
Right? Like if you think you're sick from something and the doctor gives you something that he says is, you know, the cure, but it's really just a salt pill, right? Like then you take it and you feel fucking better.
But there are people in mental institutions who claim that they are possessed by the devil. Okay. Obviously they're not. Some of those people are crazy and they literally are restrained and they have to be on drugs every day and be catatonic, and that's
but
fine.
What's the difference between them and somebody who's possessed?
This is my point. But there are people like this 14-year-old boy who didn't claim to actually be possessed by anything. All these things started to happening, and you show me one person that can lay on a bed and then make the whole bed shake without actually moving. You show that to me and I'm going to go with you. That's something I can't explain.
Look, again, it comes down to me to the, and we've talked about this ad nauseum, man. It comes down to me seeing something
to believe it. Yeah, totally.
Or even having a confirmed record of something. Like, there's no confirmation that the bed shook. There's no confirmation that, you know, there was things written on the boy's body. Like, these are all coming from the direct people that were involved, i.e. the priests, who were the only ones in the room with the boy, right? So, and sometimes I feel like that's for a reason, so that they can corroborate, man. Like, they have the story down. Like, they know what they're going to say.
Yeah, but see, the thing is that this family didn't necessarily, like, the church didn't seek them out, man. Like, somebody literally went to the Catholic Church. They weren't Catholic. They went to the church and asked them to come in and help. And they offered their services. It wasn't like they were part of the Catholic Church and, like, they found that this boy was sick and they were like, he's possessed. We have to do an exorcism. They were sought out.
You go to see a private eye.
Mm-hmm.
And you tell this private eye about your life.
I know where you're going with this.
What is the private eye going to say to you? Is the private eye going to say, oh, no, there's probably nothing going on?
Right.
Right? Just go back home. You're good. No, the private eye is going to say, man, that sounds like your husband's cheating on you.
Yeah, but
I'm going to go find out. Right?
But,
and then they're going to find all that they can find to corroborate your worst fears. Okay? Come back with proof and photo evidence and all this shit, and then fucking destroy the marriage and collect the money that you're paying them. Now, the church isn't getting money from these people. They're doing it as a service, but at the same time, they're drumming up a whole lot of publicity and press, which is going to drive people towards the church because something evil exists in the world.
No, that's not true, man, because
okay.
This...
All right, no, I'm just saying.
No, but seriously, look at this. Like, this story would not have been known by anybody unless William Peter Blatty found out about it and then wrote The Exorcist. Do you believe that the church inherently wants to do something good and actually maybe believe that they could help this kid and actually did go in there with good intentions, like, and actually tried to help him, like, why does it always have to be that there's something in it for the church? Like, the Catholic Church doesn't always do things for the money and the recognition. They actually maybe wanted to go in and actually try to help this kid. Right? Like, you know I'm right, man. There's a part of you that knows that's right.
No, there's a part of me that knows that this child is having a psychological episode where he believes that something is happening to him. The Catholic Church goes in with their belief that they have this practice that they have, this exorcism that they're going to perform that could possibly help save this child. While it's a possibility that it was real and the priest came in there and fucking kicked ass, all right, punched that motherfucking demon right back to Snake Mountain.
Snake Mountain.
Right? That, like, bro, anything can happen, right?
Right,
but,
right.
But at the same time, like, my, and I'm not saying that I believe that it was, that this stupid is what it was, but this is how I process it. This is what I'm thinking, because throughout history, throughout the centuries, there has been this belief that people could be possessed by spirits and so on and so forth. But it's only the Catholic religion, right, that has decided that they had to wage all-out war on people that were possessed, right? So there's something weird about that, in my opinion.
There's a lot of BS out there. There's a lot of those people, those, you know, TV evangelists who basically they put their hand on somebody's head and they're like, oh, you're cured. And that person falls back and goes into convulsions. Right. I mean, that's all a bunch of bullshit.
That's what I'm saying. A lot of it is psychological. Even if there's cases of actual demonic possession, right? Mm-hmm. Like, can I deny that? Can I say that it doesn't happen? Can I say that it's like impossible? No, I can't. But even if there are, I am sure that they're very freaking few and far between.
This is goes into a lot of other cases. Like, there's the exorcism of Emily Rose, which was a movie, which was based on a real person.
Yeah,
right?
Annalise Michelle. Which you sent me an article.
I did.
From the lineup. Basically, you know, they describe it as perhaps one of the most terrifying exorcism cases in history. And Michelle was a young German woman who had struggled from an early age with mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
Check.
Yep.
Diagnosed with epileptic psychosis. She also experienced depression and visual and auditory hallucinations, for which she was hospitalized. With time, her symptoms intensified, growing to include an aversion towards religious iconography.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And this is all on the article that you sent me. I'm actually reading this verbatim. Both she and her Catholic family attributed her condition to demonic possession.
Mm-hmm.
And beginning at 22, she underwent an intense 10 months of Catholic exorcism rites. Nearly 70 exorcisms were performed. 70!
Mm-hmm.
In secrecy, under the order of the church. In July of 1976, Michelle passed away. An autopsy declared her death was the result of emaciation, malnutrition, and starvation at the hands of her priests and her family, who had during the exorcisms discontinued consultations with doctors. The family and priests involved were investigated, charged with negligent homicide, and found guilty of manslaughter, serving 6 months in jail and 3 years probation. Now, they were charged with negligent homicide,
mm-hmm.
found guilty of manslaughter, and served 6 months in jail.
Right.
6 months. Mm-hmm. Not years. Months.
6 months.
Yep. And 3 years of probation.
Right.
Yo, everything that I just read there,
mm-hmm.
nothing tells me that this girl should be dead right now.
Right. No, I mean, this is one of the cases that it's more famous because everything about this actually shows that she probably was not possessed. I think that, yeah, there probably was something going on with this woman that doctors could have actually maybe evaluated a little bit more.
you know, for this particular case, I tend to lean more towards it was probably something going on medically with her. The movie, on the other hand, made it seem like it was a completely different story.
And it was, because it had to be
for a horror movie. Yeah, and honestly, it was actually really acted well. And I forgot the actress's name, but she was actually the same actress who played Dexter's sister in the Showtime series Dexter.
Yeah.
She knocked it out of the park. She was great in this. However, you know, but there are certain things that I kind of want to bring up when we talk about the topic of exorcisms, right? So it's not like you can just say somebody's possessed, right? The church has to come in and do certain things. Certain tests have to be run. The other thing is it has to
explain the test to me.
All right. So as far as I know, right, that there's different types of tests. And I don't, there's like one or two of them that I know about.
Is it like an SAT?
No, basically it's like, you know, they do the thing with, you know, they'll take like a cross and show it to them and see how they react, right? Who knows? The person could always fake that. There's the holy water that they throw on them and see if they react to that. They also come in and actually do sort of like an interview process where they meet with the person that's supposed to be possessed and look at their symptoms. Are they able to move things on their own? Is there are objects moving on their own? Is there levitation going on? Are they speaking a language that they've had no education on and no prior knowledge to? The tone of their voice, like you can, if somebody has a certain, everybody has a certain range in their voice. If their voice completely changes to something that they is out of their range, like then that's a little something to consider as well.
Like a flashcard test, like Peter Venkman.
Sure, yeah, with the electroshock therapy. Yeah,
yeah.
The other thing is referencing something, like having knowledge about something that there's no way you could have knowledge about it. Like, and somebody could say, oh, well, then she had to know. But let's say, like, there's something that you only told your mother specifically, nobody was around, that person is able to actually tell you about it. How do you actually explain that? How do you explain somebody speaking a language fluently, no mistakes, having no education in it and no prior knowledge of it?
If I hear somebody speaking a language, quote unquote, that I don't know or that they don't know, I'm probably gonna be like, yo, what the fuck were they speaking?
Right.
Then maybe you hazard a guess. Maybe it sounds like Latin.
No,
sounds,
but I mean,
like Aramaic. Which
but
nobody
you'll,
fucking knows what it sounds like.
No, but you'll have like priests come in that actually, like in the seminary. My father actually was going to be a priest. He went to the seminary for a lot of years. They actually would have full masses in Latin. So, like, priests do have a lot of knowledge in Latin. There's a mass in East Providence that was done completely in Latin. I didn't know the mass was going to be in Latin, but I sat through it and it was mega interesting. But if you have a priest that actually speaks Latin and can verify what she's saying and it's fluent, explain that. You can't. Like, those are certain things, man, that you have to consider. Like, how is this person speaking a language they don't know, right? How are they moving things when they're held down in restraints? Like, those are things that just, for me, jump out as red flags. Like, something else is at work here. You know, it's not everything can be explained with a scientific explanation. And that's redundant. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, those are...
you might as well ask me, like, dude, like, if you see somebody rip their flesh in half and they turn into a werewolf right in front of your eyes in a full moon, explain that. Just explain that shit, bro. You can't explain it. No, you can't. You can't explain it. You're right. You're absolutely fucking right. That's unexplainable. It's supernatural. And I don't believe it happens.
But see,
if it happened right in front of me, yes, I would believe. And I'd be like, dude, I can't explain that. That shit's supernatural. Done.
Yo, there are documented cases where people speak languages that they have no prior knowledge of. What do you mean? Oh, I can't explain it. It's supernatural. It never happened. Yeah, look it up, bro. Like, it's documented that things like that have actually happened. So you can't say that it's never happened.
Yeah,
it has happened.
If I wrote a paper on a werewolf and shit like that, then I've documented that a werewolf happened. You know what I mean?
No, bro. Yes, no. No, it's because documented. No, no one's actually seen that legit happen. People have seen people speak languages that they don't know.
Okay.
All right.
Have you?
I have not seen right. that specifically, but
I haven't either. So
there are there's video documentation of it. People speaking languages that they come out of it and they're like, I don't remember saying that. I don't even speak Latin. I don't know what's happening. Like, I'm just saying, man, like, you have a video footage of somebody turning into a werewolf? That was not the Monster Squad. I mean, like, what?
Yo, if you ever hear me speak another language, then you know something's up because I know zero other languages.
Yeah, all right.
Except for maybe like hola and como se llama.
Yeah, you even nailed that. So yeah. Obviously there's something going on if you can't. Yeah, so that's all I wanted to get out of you was it can't be explained. It's supernatural.
If that happens...
It did happen.
No, it cannot be explained.
Yeah. Oh, dude, right. The worst. The worst. So, which is why we're having this conversation.
Correct.
But yeah, man, I mean, I think one of the other things that I wanted to bring up that's very interesting in terms of exorcisms are not something that happen just on people. They also happen on houses and on objects that may be haunted or possessed by certain entities like we've talked about. So everybody's familiar with the movie Amityville, right? Perfect example, whether or not it actually happened or not, but people have had this happen in their houses where people will say that they want to have the house blessed, right? A priest will come in and actually bless the house, right?
Right.
But sometimes people will actually have weird things going on in their house and a priest will come in. Some priests have felt that they've been attacked. Some other things will happen and they actually get the permission to do an exorcism on the house and try to expel whatever may be in the house. Like if somebody died in the house and so forth. So that's an example right there. But one of the cases on an object was something that a lot of people are actually familiar with, but nobody actually knows the true story. And I'm not going to do the entire story. I'll just give you a brief synopsis of it. But everybody knows the movie Annabelle, which is a complete ripoff of what actually happened. But Annabelle does not look like the doll in the movie. It actually looks like a Raggedy Ann doll that was given to a young girl, a young boy. Young girl. And they noticed that the Annabelle doll would move to different places in the house. They actually would find the doll with like a piece of parchment paper with something written on it that said, help me. And they didn't actually even have any parchment paper. So where did that come from? So they started actually doing tests by putting like a rug in a certain place, putting like a door with tape on it to see if anybody was actually coming into the apartment. And they would come home and find that everything was where it should be and nobody was coming into the apartment. But the only thing that had moved was the doll. So they actually started having weird things happening, like where the doll would be in different places, the arms would move. And then one of the boyfriend of the girl that owned the doll actually had a dream while the doll was sitting in a chair across from him and had a dream that this doll was attacking him, and then woke up and he had these visible scratches underneath his shirt where he felt he was actually being attacked. And there was like, you know, like actually like blood coming through their shirt. So they actually hired Ed and Lorraine Warren, who everyone knows now because of movies like The Conjuring and Annabelle and stuff like that. But they are experienced professional demonologists that came in and actually had a priest do multiple exorcisms on this doll. But there is still a belief that there may be something evil attached to it. And it's actually in their museum, in their house. Ed and Lorraine Warren take a lot of objects that are believed to be haunted away from people to protect them and keep it in this museum, in their house. You know, these items are continually blessed like once every couple of weeks by a priest that comes in to try to keep everything at bay. And this Annabelle doll has had multiple interactions with people. One gentleman came in, taunted the doll and said, this is bullshit. This doll's fake. I don't believe in it. Ha ha ha. Making fun of it with his girlfriend. Ed Warren went up to him and was like, son, you're going to have to leave the museum. You have to leave now. Gun on his motorcycle and literally on the way home got in a freak accident. He died, the girlfriend survived. You know, this object is in a museum, but multiple, like I said, exorcisms have been done on it to try to expel whatever was in the doll out.
Right. So did it ever work, or?
As far as I know, I mean, the doll is in the museum, and you know, that's where it stays. People have tried to buy it from them, and it's not for sale. Just like the Mogwai, it's not for sale. So I was going to go to the museum years ago. I don't want to even go anymore, because like Lorraine Warren, Ed Warren passed away, but Lorraine Warren even says, when you come into the museum, do not touch anything. Like, all these items can possibly still have things attached to them that you don't want to have physical contact with. I don't necessarily want to put myself in a position where I'm walking through a museum filled with stuff that has all that apparently evil attached to it. Because if there is something attached to it and it for some reason follows my ass home, I'm in some fucking trouble. I don't necessarily want to take the chance. It's just not worth it to me. It probably would be cool to walk through there and see that stuff, but it's not worth it. So, and I don't necessarily want to hire a priest to do an exorcism in my house.
Bro,
so.
I'm telling you, that is like one thing that you and I can agree on is that, yo, I may not believe, but that's not how I want to find out.
Right, exactly.
I don't want to find out because I was a fucking dumbass that went in that, you know, jumped into like a fucking well of negative energy and, you know, pull something out. You know what I mean? Like, you're the idiot that did that shit. You know what I mean? Like, nah, that's not me.
See, the fact that you actually believe there's a chance that you could pull some shit home, no, I know that there's a part of you that believes in this stuff.
I'm just not dumb. Right? I'm not dumb. But so it's not scientifically proven, but it's not scientifically disproven as well. Mm-hmm. You understand? So I have an analytic mind. I have a very technical mind. There's nothing that proves that the shit doesn't exist. Like, if I'm trying to find out if fucking two things, if you combine them, will explode, I'm not going to do that shit with my bare hands and combine these things. That's just dumb. That's dumb.
Right. That's actually a good metaphor.
That doesn't mean that me going in there is going to, like in my head, I'm not going to be like, oh, look at that doll. It's haunted, right? I'm not going to be like afraid to go to the museum.
Right.
But I'm not going to do shit to experiment and see if it's real.
Oh, so you would go to the museum and walk through?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, see, that's where you and me might differ.
I would definitely go and walk through and like see all the stuff and like be like, yo, this is super interesting.
I actually emailed her nephew, who basically runs the museum or whatever. And obviously they're you know, religious, right? And I asked him, I said, you know, I was very serious with him. I said, you know, I'm really considering coming to the museum. What can I personally do to make sure that, or to help ensure that I'm protected from these things when I go in there? Like, I don't plan on touching anything. He's like, even if you're not Catholic, it's something that, like Lorraine Warren says, she goes, you want to, what is the word? She goes, you want to circle yourself in a circle of love before you actually go into the museum. You say a prayer with like the Virgin Mother in mind, and you ask for her protection, where you envision almost like an aura around you that shields you from any like negative energy. Whether or not that is, you know, a real thing, I mean, I believe that it is, but I just thought that was an interesting way that he actually responded with something like that, which I wouldn't expect him to. You know, I thought he was going to be like, enter at your own risk and leave it at that, you know? So not just people, inanimate objects and houses and so forth. Exorcisms do work and have been done if you believe in those things. So with that being said, I think that's pretty much all we got.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. So we hope you enjoyed this episode. Make sure to check us out in 2 weeks when we come back with Larry Morgan, who actually is going to be sharing some tales from his home in the South, where he's had a lot of personal experiences. So make sure to tune in 2 weeks. Other than that, see you later.
Peace.
Thanks for listening to the Redbeard Podcast, which is part of the Nerd Ruckus Network. Please take a moment and like our Facebook page and share your thoughts on the episode, as well as what you would like to hear us discuss.
Also, give us a follow on Redbeard Podcast and Nerd Ruckus on Instagram and Twitter. And check out nerdruckus.com for all of our entertainment channels.